This is an Irish Independent podcast.
It was another championship weekend when the provincial structures took centre stage, with a lot of conversation about the Leinster Championship in particular, with Colm O'Rourke calling it a shambles after Dublin's routine victory over the Royal County. Although there was an upset win for Offaly over Laois, and Wicklow almost provided some dramatic drama as they almost pipped Kildare. Welcome to the Throwing Football Show. Will Slattery here with you. Delighted to be joined by Colm Keyes and Dick Clerkin for our chat today. And Colm, I know you were in Croke Park yesterday. A game that played out, I think you said in your match report, as you know, predictably. It started predictably, it proceeded predictably, and it finished predictably. But the conversation at the end of the game was interesting. Both managers kind of, for maybe slightly different reasons, talking about the Leinster Championship and just saying it's a dead duck. And I know we've kind of talked about that a lot in this show, but for that to be the immediate conversation after a Dublin Meath game once again, it just kind of really hammered home what the Leinster Championship is now. What did you make of that kind of conversation after the game?
Nothing new from either Colm O'Rourke or Desi Farrell on it. It was just reiteration of points they have made in the past. Desi is no longer an advocate of the provincial championships. He feels that the dip after a competitive league and then to have to build up, you'd almost think it's an impediment to Dublin the way he talks, that they have to scale down a little bit and move back up. And Colm O'Rourke has been saying, and obviously in different positions to where he is now as manager, it's in the condition it's in because Dublin are so strong and the rest are so weak. If you remove Dublin from the Leinster Championship, you have actually quite a good championship. Now, it's not a standard that's going to measure up, obviously, with Ulster or even Connacht, which is well ahead of it in terms of broader competitiveness. But if you look at the other results that have occurred over the last 2 weekends, you have Wicklow beating Westmeath and almost beating Kildare in Port Laois yesterday. You have Louth pursuing back-to-back Leinster finals for the first time since the 1950s, when they were at the peak of their powers as an All-Ireland winning team the year after they reached the Leinster final too. That's something to aim for this Louth team. Now, I'm not trying to speak about the Leinster Championship in any glowing terms. It is where it is because the structures remain the same. My preference for this, before you go tearing it all asunder, is to simply go back to where it was in 2021 and play the provincial championships first. And provincial councils should not be afraid of that, because if they're the first games of the year and there are no pre-season tournaments, well, the benefits are that crowds will go to them. Even if there's an inevitability in Leinster, they will still go to a lot of these games. The revenues that they will generate will be something similar to what they're generating now, and there will be a little bit more interest. And it will take the pressure off teams. And that frantic start, that need to be out in November, that need to be driving at it so early because so much depends on your early results for league placing, that's all gone. And you can actually live, coexist with college games and all of that. And even the pressure that players will be to get back earlier in the season won't be there. And then you'll build up, as Desi Farrell says, into a stronger league. It's getting from the league to the All-Ireland playoffs that really is the barrier in any new season. But the Leinster Championship is not going to change. Dublin are going to dominate into the next few years as well. That's the reality. If you look at under 20 results, people will ask, and we might discuss this, will Meath bridge the gap with Dublin? They won't anytime soon, because the under 20 results project that. And you can ignore them and say they shouldn't make that much difference. But when you're consistently losing to the same team all the time, you're not going to bridge it. Actually, Kildare have probably a better chance based on that. But the capacity for Dublin players to really extend themselves, and when they get into that senior environment and they improve, I think that train is gone in Dublin. I don't see any gap being bridged, even by Kildare for all their under 20 success. I don't see it being bridged in the short term.
Yeah, Dick, what's your perspective on, like, in the Sunday game last night, Paul Flynn, you know, said, you know, for Kildare and Meath, you know, kind of large enough counties with, you know, traditional, certainly in Meath's case, you know, success over the years, that they should be aspiring to be like a Derry, who went from Division 4, you know, built all the way back up. They won Division 1. They're all Ireland contenders. Because Colm O'Rourke said, like, the Leinster Championship is a shambles, but he said it's not Dublin's fault. It's the fault of teams like Meath, he said, that who haven't been able to reach that level to make it more competitive. Is it Is it realistic to think that Meath or Kildare in particular, because they're the two big counties outside of Dublin and Leinster, that they could kind of emulate a Derry and become competitive? Colm says he doesn't think it's realistic in the medium term even.
No, it's not. It's a pipe dream. If of course any county can raise up through, and Shaway wouldn't I say that being from Monaghan, because we've done that. But you have to understand what is needed to get there. So if you take Derry, why have Derry made the transition from a sort of a bit of a basket case county down Division 4 to been the top two teams in the country, right? They got their house in order at the executive and county board level. They have a very good system and structure, full-time CEO driving organisational change. They have always had a super club structure, great clubs, constantly winning Ulster club championships, competing. Okay, Kildare and Meath don't have that. They have got a very poor and weak, and then this, I'm not being unfair to anybody when I'm talking about the conversation to compete at the top. They're not producing club teams, and they don't have the standard at club level to get them up there. Derry always have that. They just needed to get it right to transfer into inter-county. So if you're talking with a team trying, it has to be from the ground up. You have to have that consistency coming from clubs and that commitment to playing for county football. If you don't have that, you're just going to repeat what we've seen with counties. You're trying to throw a bit of effort into a county team, high profile management team, might make a bit of a burst, but you'll eventually slip back. So the fundamentals aren't there at the minute for them to realistically consider that. And that's what Dublin have. Dublin have that very, very competitive club scene that's just driving standards at every level, that when the cream is selected for a county level, it's just, as Colm said, they just can't compete with it. So that's the problem. It is such a long way to try and get to that. It's not a year or two. I would say there's a 10 years effort at least in Leinster counties if they really wanted to get to that level. But that's a huge amount of work and commitment. But the first step is you have to recognise there's a problem. And I think that's one of the big issues, especially in the likes of Meath. I've never got the sense that there's a recognition in Meath football that there's been a big enough problem that they need to do things differently. And hence why it's sort of been a repetitive issue with their lack of competitiveness in Leinster and against Dublin for the last decade plus.
I'd agree with Dick in terms of culture has evaporated in Meath, especially around clubs. I think a lot of resources, Dick, have been put into Meath and a lot of restructuring, and it just hasn't come off. And I put it down to uncompetitive clubs. And maybe the same interest in the game in Meath isn't there that was there in the past. And I certainly feel that's diluted, that it doesn't mean as much as it does in a place like Derry. You mentioned Derry there in the club scene. Derry have four. It's amazing, really. Around the Loch Shore, obviously, around that part of Derry, that part of Southeast Derry, they have four All-Ireland winning clubs within a 100 square miles or something like that. Maybe it's 150 square miles, something. But it's small and it's tight. And three of them are literally neighbouring clubs. Ballanderry are a little bit off, but Ballaghy, Lavie and Glen are all pretty close together in Ballanderry. It is the most competitive club environment in the country. There is no doubt about that, even more so. And that produces competitiveness. And I suppose when you take away, and I think Rory Gallagher was probably able to strip out the rivalries and bring them together. And obviously now Mickey Hart and Gavin Devlin are able to develop that. But it is the bedrock of it, that they produce competitive teams and an environment where the culture is right. There's no culture of coaching in Meath, and to a lesser degree Kildare as well, that they really, people really pursue coaching interests and looking at, maybe setting up differently. That's not there. Maybe it'll come. I think it'll come over a much longer period of time. But right now, there isn't a quick fix for it. I think, personally, I feel, and even though they're in Division 3 and they're hanging on for dear life in Sam Maguire, actually, I think Kildare will probably come quicker and close the gap, but to close it completely, I don't think so. And obviously, they're driven on by Naas, and Naas have won three in a row in Kildare for the first time in many, many years, and they look like dominating. But there are probably other club teams there that just make it a bit more competitive, that environment, than Meath.
Yeah, because like Kildare and Meath haven't suffered, in the league anyway. They've kind of been between Division 2 and Division 1 for the majority of Dublin's, extended period of dominance since 2011 in the Leinster Championship. Obviously, like we said, Derry went down to Division 4. Meath and Kildare have been able to, maintain a certain standard, but they have, bar maybe Kildare last year, when they ran Dublin close, I think it was in a Leinster semi-final. Like, the games haven't even been anyway competitive. Not alone have they not won a Leinster title, but they haven't even been able to lay a finger on Dublin, which, you know, considering that they're Division 2 standard, ostensibly for the most part of that period, that is kind of surprising. If Dublin play a lot of Division 2 teams, Division 1 teams, they're not always cakewalks. Yet when they play Kildare and Meath, for the most part, it always has been. Is it kind of this, that culture of beating them for so long has just broken those teams, you think? Because in terms of quality...
Yes, it's belief. You know, and you can see that they're going out there, and there's such a gap between them that they know, they just know they're not going to win the game. And I said last week, all I wanted for me this weekend was to compete. You know, not to win, just to compete and stay with them as long as they could. That the game wasn't over after 10, 15 minutes, because that's good for nobody, not Dublin, not me, and not people looking at the game. And just too often, teams just don't go up there and compete. And it's not Dublin's fault. And there's a separate conversation there that Dublin have got too far ahead of Leinster. But lots of those counties that we've talked about, they might play Dublin year in, year out, be it in the league or the championships. You can't be blaming Dublin for your lack of progression. You can still progress well within the league, get out of Division 2 and compete. You might only play... So Dublin can't be blamed for the lack of progress in the other Leinster counties, which sometimes that has been thrown up over the last 10 years. And you know, because there's enough resources, and I keep going back to our own situation here, you know, making the best of what you have is what you have to do first before you go looking for help and blaming others. And just counties like Meath, Kildare, Louth, good to see them getting their shape together. They have enough resources to compete and to try and set, and that's what every county has to try and do. Get their best club players out playing, set standards, as Colm touched, invest in coaching, have the best that you can get, and have that internally. But how many times have you... Colm, you're a great stats man. Like, I watch year on year the amount of boys from Ulster coming out of the Dublin 95 team, heading out the motorways to manage teams in Leinster for a year or two, get a few bob for a few years, and the thing goes nowhere. Like, these counties need to invest in their own people as much as trying to get a quick fix from Dublin or from up the north. And too often you see that. You could write a list of 20, 30 managers that have been in there and left nothing behind them. And I think that's been a failed strategy as well from Leinster counties over the years.
And Colm, was there anything... Are you going to come in there?
No, go on ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, like, was there anything from the on-pitch, I suppose, stuff yesterday that is worth kind of digging into a bit? I know, obviously, Stephen Cluxton came back in, maybe had a bit of a struggle in the first half, probably a bit rusty. Obviously, Paul Mannion hit 1-6, looked quite sharp. Michael Fitzsimons was back. James McCarthy came back off the bench as well. That's probably the big talking points, or anything else that you thought was of interest?
Just to go back to the difference between Dublin and Meath was, obviously football ability, but also a huge athletic and physical difference. I made a note of one particular score, obviously make a note of all the scores, but put a ring around this one. 55 minutes, the Meath centre-back, Ross Ryan, gets a ball. He's looking to come out of defence, and he's descended upon by four Dublin players. Nowhere to go. They go after him so quickly. Ball pops out to John Small. John Small gets a second point Dublin goal. He gets 8 or 9 points clear. And I just said, there it is. There's the difference every time with the top teams, the level of aggression they bring to getting the ball back. And I saw it to a degree with Armagh yesterday as well against Fermanagh. They really can go after when they really go for it. And I'd say probably Armagh are guilty of not doing that enough, because they're a little similar to Mayo in ways. They need a high octane. They need a high octane pace to really go after, and Dublin will always thrive best. Dublin will thrive at any pace, but particularly the rest cannot live with them when they really go after, when they really go after that press. And they went after the Meath kickout in the second half, and Meath had a rookie keeper in as well. They made a change beforehand, and Billy Hogan, who was a prospect and he's considered a very, very good goalkeeper in Meath, but they lost 9 kickouts, not all his fault, but Dublin really squeezed hard, and Meath suffered under that intensity. But yes, you mentioned Stephen Cluxton. I had him down for 5 kickouts out of 10 in the first half that did not go to hand. They are not Cluxton's statistics, albeit he's only back into the team and this is his first run out and he will get it better. But he actually looked a bit frustrated with some of his colleagues further outfield at times yesterday, and it's almost as if he was just kicking it into space to say, go and get it yourself there, lads. And there was a little bit of that early on in the first half. Desi Farrell mentioned that Dublin were patchy in the first half. they actually were patchy. And I felt they missed Brian Fenton's just a bit of composure that he brings. It wasn't always there. And I just felt that they missed him through those early stages. Obviously, as the game went on, you didn't feel that and others, and the power and pace that Dublin were able to go at burned off Meath. But yeah, a little bit patchy around that. Mick Fitzsimons did well, I thought, when he came in, a couple of very good tackles. And Paul Mannion looked really sharp. I mean, even for the goal, the side-footing goal, showing all his old soccer skills there, really, really good finish. Thought Paddy Small made an impact, but Dublin did what they had to do. And, you know, they're pitching for later in the year. And the Leinster Championship is really like an O'Byrne Cup to them at this stage. It's sad to say, but they are that far ahead.
Dick, to be fair, like, it was 1-8 to 6 points at half time, and whatever chance Meath might have had, like, the Sean Buckler goal was, you know, the most blatant case of overcarrying you're ever going to see in a championship game. If that's actually correctly ruled out, like, Meath wouldn't have won the game, I don't think. But like, when the game was close in the scoreboard anyway at that stage, that is a key moment. I know in the second half I got away from them, but like, if that's refereed correctly, like, is it slightly different, do you think?
Yeah, well, it's very easy at the end of the score line to sort of retrospectively say the game was never competitive. But I can guarantee you, for me, people sitting watching that, they felt they were still in the game. At least at halftime, there was a conversation being had out the back of the stands and over a coffee or a pint or whatever that, you know, it's not home time just yet. So it was competitive to a point. Like, you're looking for, you know, a quick goal or something to kick off the second half. Now, that didn't happen, but and I think that can't be lost either. They did stay with them, and even I think at 50 minutes there or thereabouts, there was still only 5 or 6 points between them. So I would take that as progress. This might seem very condescending or whatever, but you got to take your wins or green shoots where they are. So the fact that they stayed with them, and you're right, well, like, that goal should have been ruled out. That was bad referee, and you can't allow, if he's fouled, blow the free. You can't be giving him an extra 5 steps. You know, that's just bad referee. And, you know, God knows the benefit of the doubt should have been going to Meath there. They needed more than Dublin. But, you know, bad calls happen. So I think they did compete for a while. And I think, you know, Meath shouldn't be too despondent, because you'll see that in games now, that I think they ran in a few goals, and, you know, you can quickly add on, you know, 5 or 6 points in injury time. It mightn't be just a true reflection of the game. So the result never in doubt. I think Meath, you know, can take some solace that they could compete with them for a while and put Cluxton under pressure, as Colm said, and try and bring that on now to the next phase in the All-Ireland, because they're going to be playing potentially Dublin again, or a Kerry or a Derry. So they've got to have to learn how to, you know, right, now 50 minutes, we've now got to get it to 60 minutes and try and bring it all the way. So take some positives from it. I don't think it needs to be completely dismissed yesterday.
Yeah, and Colm, you mentioned like the Leinster Championship generally, if Dublin weren't in it being, you know, quite competitive. We saw that over the weekend in the other games, like Offaly getting, I think, their first win over Portlaoise in the Championship since 1978, I think. And, you know, the Wicklow-Kildare game was probably the game of the weekend. You know, it was a madcap finish where Wicklow almost caught the Kildare goalkeeper off his line after a turnover, but then Kildare obviously hit that winning point. And now they set up a kind of a massive game for them against Louth in 2 weeks' time, where if they win, they dump Westmeath out of the Sam Maguire and they take their place. And if they lose, they're into the Tailteann Cup. So, as you say, the rest of the province is pretty competitive.
It is. And obviously, as I mentioned at the outset, Wicklow went and beat Westmeath and almost beat Kildare. Now, could you have said that at the very start of the year, we'll say, before Kildare had their such a poor Division 2 campaign? No, you wouldn't have said that, or even close. But it just shows what a win can do for a county like Wicklow. And you think of the build-up last week. They're energised by what happened, whereas Kildare go into that game with an element of fear that if things don't go well for us and we're under pressure, and they were under pressure down the home straight, and maybe Kildare will take that renewed energy that a win gives you. Remember, they lost 7 games in Division 2, and even the last day when they were gone, you would have thought against Louth, with the pressure off, shall we say, they're relegated, they're gone, let's go after this. They couldn't beat Louth, so that creates a further doubt. But down to, actually, as it was, 13 players, but they were without Kevin Flynn for a long stretch of that game after his high challenge. So they dug it out in a way that maybe people didn't think that they would. And they have Kevin Feely, and Kevin Feely has been magnificent for Kildare, even throughout that league campaign when they were suffering. He was the one that kept them afloat in difficult times. And his catching and his kicking are just superb. I'd put him up there with the best fielders of the ball in the game, maybe the best. And his kicking is superb as well. And again, yesterday, 7 points, couple of great scores off his left, together with Niall Kelly, another guy who's probably his career span, he's missed a few years, but he must be 11, 12 years associated with Kildare. He came up and played very well, played exceptionally well as well in that game. So they'll go into the Loud game with a different mindset. I think Loud still have more better players in form than Kildare have at present. I think Loud are putting together a really good attack. Mm-hmm. But again, it's probably the most interesting of games outside of Ulster. I think Kildare and Loud probably captures the imagination now because of the consequences, even for Westmeath as Division 3 champions, maybe missing out. So from that point of view, there is a bit of intrigue there. Obviously, the other side, Dublin, will do what they do against Offaly and move on. But on this side, at least, the battle to get into a Leinster final. Obviously, I mentioned Loud in the 1958 and the back-to-back would be great for them, but for Kildare to rescue their season. So a lot at stake.
Yeah, and that's 2 weeks' time. But next weekend, we have a couple of really interesting games, Dick. Derry Donegal is the pick of them. I think as soon as the draw was made, everyone was relishing the prospect of Mickey Hart and Jim McGuinness going head-to-head again. Like, what are you expecting from the game? Like, will it be 100% championship pitch? You know, from a Derry perspective, they won Division 1. They've won two Ulsters in a row. Will their eye be further along the line, or will this be a massive game for them as well, do you think?
I think there's a lot at stake now for both teams. I think Jim McGuinness, it'd be interesting to know what he was thinking when he was watching the League One final a few weeks back after they had beaten Armagh. Like, there was an obvious gulf in standard and class, and I wonder, and that's the intrigue now, how in terms of approach, game setup, whatever you want to call it, does he bridge that gap? Because it's a gap he has to bridge. If they just go out and play at their best, you know, Derry win that game by, you know, 5 or 6 points comfortably. So is tactically, or Donegal going to try to bring something differently? And that's the intrigue that Jimmy McGuinness brings to it. I think he will. I think he has, from what I've seen. He's going to try and play a full press to try and sort of turn over kickouts and tackle high up the field. I think if they retreat and be too conservative and sort of recognise that they're the lesser team, I think that's just a foregone conclusion what way the results go. So if they do push up and they do try and put a high press, like we've seen Armagh done against Fermanagh, try and turn the ball over high up the pitch and don't just give the Derry players the space and time to run up the field, I think he could have a great game, because that sets a really brilliant dynamic. Because it's more open and it's the players are spread around the field. So watch out for that early doors. What approach Donegal, because Donegal will ultimately set the tone of the game. Now, I'm seeing that he could, knowing Jim McGuinness, he could completely go the other way. He might sort of say, listen, the gap is too big here. If we go out man for man, these Derry guys, they break our tackles and get through, we could be done for by the half time. So it could conceivably be, you know, Dublin 2012 story as well, that they just camp down, try to keep it as tight as possible, make it an absolute dour game and keep it tight. So that's intriguing enough. So that's enough to tune in to see how tactically that game's going to play out, because at this point in time, I couldn't tell you. All I know is Jim McGuinness needs to bring something very special, very different from a coaching and a tactical point of view to have any chance to bridge the gap between Donegal and Derry at the minute.
Yeah, Colin, what's your perspective on some of the points Dick raised there? Like, how do you see the game unfolding from a tactical point of view in that regard?
You know, I think they'll both go at it. I don't think Jim McGuinness is going to bring a Donegal team into Celtic Park and hunker down and try and catch them on the break. I think they will go after them high, as Derry will. I think he will set up quite similar to Derry if he can and get those players breaking from the back, because Donegal did get a lot during the league from defenders breaking from deep positions, and it was quite clear that was a tactic, as they did in his previous time as well. We're of the mindset that that 2011 game really burns in the mind, but I think after that in 2012 and then even into 2014, at times they really pushed bodies forward, not so much in the All-Ireland final when Kerry tactically probably got the better of them that day. But I do think we'll see both setting up very similarly. I think at home, and I think as league champions, and I think the experience of Croke Park that they've built up over the last couple of years gives Derry the edge here.
I think you're right. if you reflect back to Jim McGuinness's first time, like, his success was built around having a system, having a process that they work on intensely at training, you know, just repetitive drills, repetitive gameplay situations that it sort of burned into the player's mind. That they know when they go out to the field, every player knows what they're doing, they know what the role is. So, as you say, whilst I'm sort of saying on one hand they could, that would be completely counter to what they've been working on that we've seen anyway to date over the league. So it's highly unlikely, because you're just sort of tossing the coin whether the players will be able to actually implement that, because they haven't really been doing that. So I'm hoping that they do play like we've seen today, that they push up, try and not let the dairy runners get their yards up, and try and pin them back. And that is the makings of a great game, because there's going to be a lot of open play, a lot of opportunities for goals. And if they do and have a cut at them, you'd wish them luck, because any team that plays to that deserves to get the benefit of the doubt. Like we've seen Armagh at the weekend pass, we might touch on that they went out, set the agenda, they played positive, and they won the game by half time. Unfortunately, we didn't touch it on, Monaghan didn't do the same the previous week in Breffni. Far too conservative, didn't play, set the tempo. So you can see that teams now should be rewarded for playing positively and trying to play up the pitch, you know.
Yeah, Armagh take on Down in the other semi final, I think, in 2 weeks' time. Obviously, Down will need to win to get into the Samogor as well. So it'll be kind of interesting stakes there as well. Another game next Saturday, Colin, we have Kerry Cork. Do you expect that to be kind of similar to Dublin Meath and kind of going the way we've seen the majority of these games go over the last 10-15 years, bar that famous one during the COVID period? Or can Cork, you know, they've been hitting a lot of goals recently, their firepower from open play has been pretty impressive. Can they cause some trouble in Killarney?
I think they'll cause trouble. I would think that. I think the way they finished the league is certainly a good indicator as to where they were. Okay, they weren't so convincing against Limerick, or certainly as convincing as you might have expected them to have been. But the form of their forwards has been pretty decent. Chris Oak-Jones now was a real revelation for Cork in the league. I think it was 2:15 he scored. Conor Corbett, who's had a lot of injury problems, he was obviously their star minor a few years ago. He's put those injury problems behind him, and he seems to be coming strong as well. So all around, I think they've probably a settled team, Cork. They certainly won't be. They're nowhere near as inferior to Dublin as Meath and Kildare, if you like. They're more traditional rivals. They're certainly not. They don't have that inferiority complex to Kerry to the same degree. I do think Kerry will get out and they'll get on top. But it won't be anything similar to what we saw over the weekend. I think Cork will hang in for a long time, cause a bit of trouble. And you go back to the game in Páirc Uí Chaoimh last year, it stands to reason that, you know, Kerry benefited from a penalty that I think was a penalty in accordance with the rule. Obviously, there was a lot of dispute about it, but it was a penalty. They got the break in that instance and they were able to get out in front. But the games have been relatively close. Even the game the year before in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, took a long time for Kerry to get on top on that too. So I think that's what we're looking at.
Yeah, Dick, what's your perspective on that one?
Yeah, I think Cork, if you even look at their league form, you know, they finished with 7 points mid-table. You might think, oh, that's fairly average, but they got those 7 points in their last four games. So they're undefeated in their last four. So that gets momentum, it gets confidence. You know, you have players, new players coming in, they're getting game time, they're getting used to winning, which is a big thing. And going against Kerry and Killarney, you need to be going in there with a bit of confidence and belief and not a hope and a prayer. So to have that, and, you know, So they're looking to build on that. Now, whether they'll beat them or not, you know, doesn't matter a whole pile in the broader schemes. They're going to be in the All-Ireland series. But I would agree with Colin, like, the gap is definitely closer between Cork and Kerry than it was between Dublin and Meath. So I'd be very disappointed now if Cork don't show up there, because I've been critical of them over the last number of years. You talk about counties, we talk about Leinster counties that aren't making progress. There has been no excuse for Cork with the resources that they have at their disposal to make sustained progress. So they're starting to show some green shoots. So it'll be really good for the championship if they can make a really competitive game on it and bring it to the wire, you know, bring it to the last 10 minutes and see where it goes. Now, on the flip side, I think Kerry, it'll be interesting to see their approach. You got the sense that they'd sort of, you know, taken what they got from the league with a view to, right, now let's start to peak and develop for the championship. They have a nice wee break, bit of freshness back in there. They could equally be coming to Killarney going, right, we want to make a bit of a statement here, because they've almost been, you know, pushed into third place in the All-Ireland conversation with what Dublin and Derry have shown us. So they might want a bit of a statement of intent. So don't be surprised if they turn up, you know, meaning business. And so again, it has the potential, you know, to be a great contest. And I think, I'm just looking at the rain and the wind here in Monaghan and Sioges, I think there's good weather coming at the weekend in Killarney on a sunny summer's day, and we're close to it, is no better place to play football. So again, trying to be optimistic again at the end of the podcast that we could have two big games in store at the weekend in good conditions for a change.
Obviously, Jason Foley's absence from the Kerry full back line creates a dilemma for them as to who they're going to play. They're going to have to move players around, and he's a specialist fullback. He's got a bit of pace, picking up someone like Conor Corbett, or could have been Brian Hurley. So he's
was
a lost,
confirmed
no obvious
on the
candidate.
Extent of that injury, Colm? I didn't hear.
Well, he's certainly going to miss the Munster Championship because, okay, you know, that Jack O'Connor and was it Dermot Murphy said that at the Munster launch, he will miss the Munster Championship. So that takes him into the at least the middle of May before we see him again. But he's a key player for them, and his absence will be felt.
And the lastly, Dick, before we finish up, Mayo, Roscommon as well, coming up this weekend. Roscommon knocked them out of the Connacht Championship last year. You know, where are Mayo for you in this All-Ireland race? Are they in the race, do you think, legitimately, or are they a good bit off the top three that you've listed?
Yeah, well, I think I've said it before, there's a half a dozen counties in the sort of the tier two, if you want to call it. So you have tier one, Dublin, Derry, Kerry, and then, you know, half a dozen counties, of which Mayo is one. They need to show much more than we've seen in the league today, especially up front. I haven't got the sense that they've any sort of continuity or game plan. You don't really get a sense. And they do try to play positively. They push up, they turn over teams. They've done that against Monaghan in the league, which I was really impressed about. So they will have that. If you can bring that energy and that manicness, they'll always compete. But they're still lacking, you know, a bit of cutting edge up front. You know, like the likes of Tommy Conroy hasn't really found the form and consistency that he sort of promised a few years ago. Ryan O'Donnell has it there, but in fits and spurts. You know, they're playing Killian O'Connor and Aidan O'Shea, great servants, and not to be patronising, in terms of winning All-Irelands, I don't think they're going to get it from those players in forward roles. So they need to figure that out, and figure that out quickly, because if you go back to last year, and if they're hoping for a different outcome with the same sort of approach, it's very difficult to see where they're coming from. But never rule them out. I think they're as good as anything else in that sort of tier two. So they could conceivably compete in the All-Ireland series, get to a semi-final. But they've a gap to bridge there, let's be honest.
The interesting that Kevin McStay, the Mayo manager, after the New York game, he said to the Western people that he thought Ryan O'Donoghue was the best corner forward he had seen in his time. Now, I'm not sure whether he was qualifying that as the best Mayo forward or corner forward or not, or what the criteria there. But it was rich praise for Ryan O'Donoghue. He scored 113. In that game, obviously 1-4 from play. He brings a lot to them. They are very dependent on them. They've become very dependent on Ryan O'Donoghue. And even when he moves out to centre forward, he's got a brilliant pass over the top. Saw that against Derry in the second half when they made their comeback in the Derry in the league. Some of the balls he put in inside. If you had two of them, one at centre forward and one the corner forward as well, he is a really good passer at all, but they're very, very reliant on him.
Well, it's going to be an interesting weekend next weekend with Mayo Roscommon, and of course that big one, Derry Donegal, on Saturday evening. For the moment, I'd like to thank Colm and Dick for joining me on this week's episode of the Throw In Football Podcast. We'll be back next week with another show looking back on all the latest football action. In the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or listen on independent.ie. So until next time, thanks so much for listening, and goodbye.